In today's internet age, we tend to leave a digital trail of breadcrumbs wherever we go, whether we're tweeting about what we had for lunch, reading an article on a news website, or using an app to map out a morning run. We're amassing personal data that marketers and other groups can't wait to get their hands on.
And while that digital trail isn't going away anytime soon, our next guest says we can take back that data for ourselves and start putting it to work. And by doing so, we can use it to better understand ourselves, our lives, and increase our overall happiness.
Joining us now is John Havens. He's the founder of the Happathon Project and a contributing writer for Mashable and The Guardian. His new book is called Hacking Happiness, Why Your Personal Data Counts and How Tracking It Can Change the World. John, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thank you for having me.
At the beginning of this book, you write about how you had a revelation about this idea of our digital entities, identities, and what they mean. Could you talk about what happened and how you first got started thinking about this?
Sure. My dad had passed away, and I found myself, like most people when you're sort of examining grief and thinking about loss, sort of saying, how can I take a measure of my life? And in my case, I wanted to take it literally and track my actions digitally. And when I started to do that, I realized that my data, how it's being used and managed by others, was a huge part of my identity. And that became a real purpose for starting the nonprofit that I did, the Happathon Project, and writing this book.
Can you give us a thumbnail sketch of just how much digital data we're generating right now and where all of it is coming from?
It's easiest just to say ubiquitous and all the time, in the sense that a lot of people think their digital data is mainly about their computer when they knowingly enter in data, say, to subscribe to a service. Then people also are aware of, say, their mobile phones, and they get the idea that their GPS data is also now with them when they walk around. But now with something called the Internet of Things, which basically just means sensors like RFID chips or surveillance cameras, essentially data is being tracked about us anywhere we go, whether or not you're on Facebook or even have a mobile phone.
And you write that we're kind of just at the very beginning of this huge technology boom that sooner or later it's going to happen that we're in line at a coffee shop and people will be wearing altered reality vision wear, kind of like Google Glass, and they'll be able to see our Facebook data floating above our head.
Yeah, I actually think, I'm a big geek, so I'll just say that. But I love studying this stuff, and I do think whether it's 5 years or 10 years, it's essentially, definitely going to happen that these tools will be something that people will want to use. I mean, for myself, I don't know about the two of you, but I remember 10 years ago railing against the idea of using a cell phone. I remember telling my brother, I said, this is so rude. I would never use this. And 10 years later, it's almost fused to my body. So although people say like glass or even something called augmented reality contact lenses is something they wouldn't wear, when you think about a hands-free phone or a computer over your eyes, a lot of people will adopt it because they want to have their hands free to, drink their coffee while they walk along.
When you're thinking about all of this, you've used the word quantified self. Can you define that?
Sure. Quantified self is actually a term and an organization created by a guy named Gary Wolf of Wired magazine fame. And the basic logic is that you track your life using data to optimize your life. So you could actually use a pen and paper, or a friend of mine jokes about having a pair of fat pants, the pants that you put on and you've gained some weight because they're really tight. Basically, it just means you're quantifying your life. You know that you want to lose some weight. So when you're able to track or take a measure of your life on an ongoing basis, you simply have data to know how to optimize your life.
So we can use this data to optimize our lives. On the other hand, right now, all of that data, it's not really coming to us. It's going to other parties. And I think as internet users, a lot of us are aware of it, but we just sort of feel helpless about it. I mean, the options right now, you can opt out, which doesn't seem very feasible in today's world. And so how do we even start to navigate those waters, start to use it to foster well-being when we have no control over it?
Well, there's a new nascent industry, what's called the personal cloud industry. And people are probably familiar with like uploading data to, say, their Amazon cloud, or they may even use something called Dropbox, which is where you can store large files in the cloud, sort of not on your computer. That same logic, these personal cloud, or sometimes they're called personal data banks. This is now a real evolving industry around the world. It's actually grown faster in Europe and the States, where people's PII, or what's called their personally identifiable information, data, can actually be housed in this bank sort of format. And what that means is now in the future, we're hoping, or I'm hoping in the book, this is what I talk about, that people can sort of store their most essential, what's called the golden copy of their data. And then with any transaction, whether it's online, mobile, as they walk along, they can automate how they want their data and identity to be shared with the world.
So you are the owner of that personal data?
Correct.
And you could use it maybe to broker a monetary transaction, or you could use it in the ways that you write about, ways that sort of enrich your life. Can you talk about what that would be like, to use this data that's out there to make your life better?
Sure. I mean, the quantified self movement right now, there's so many great apps and wearable technologies, things like Fitbits, where the data that we have, some people are, you know, using the term big data. A lot of people with health data call it their little data. This wonderfully intimate information we've never been able to see before, it's now revealed. Things like, what does the sine wave data from my voice look like when I'm angry versus sad? And if I can timestamp that throughout the day and throughout the week, I can start to get a visual picture of a sort of a mood diary. And you can start to see, who am I with? Where am I when these different moods happen? And you start to gain insights about the places you're going that maybe aren't the best place to go to optimize your well-being. And then in terms of the data lockers, first of all that wonderful intimate information about your identity, I'm not trying to tell people how to share it. I would just love them to have the opportunity to make that decision for themselves. And then it also enables things like new, actually, economic structures, where people with a sharing economy, I talk about it in the book, like at a Starbucks, if someone wants to take your picture at a Starbucks, they can say, hey, can I, you know, pay you X amount of money to take your picture, because your face will be tagged when it goes up on Facebook. This type of a data bank or personal data cloud will allow that type of transaction.
So is that something that you can do now here in America? Can you own your own personal data on the cloud?
Well, there's a number of great companies. I interviewed a guy named Shane Green, who's CEO of Personal.com. I'm also part of the Hapathon Project, as part of what's called Respect Network, which is a group of personal cloud providers around the world. So I would definitely advise listeners to check these out. Personal, for instance, also has a great thing. I think it's called Fillit, where you enter in that golden copy of your data once, and then if you go to any website, you don't have to re-enter in your sign-in information 7,000 times. It does it for you. So it sort of gets you in the habit of seeing, this golden copy of my data is so precious, I should be the person to decide how it's managed and used.
Because right now, what happens to that data when it goes out there? Where does it go?
It depends on, you know, who you're signing in with, and most places have these Byzantine, you know, 48-page long privacy agreements. That's for a particular purpose. They want to get people, you know, focused on the sort of ennui about hating to, you know, go through all that. You just say, yes, take my data. What people don't realize is that data can be used multiple times and sold or given away to multiple parties. It's not like when you hand a dollar bill to someone to buy something. That data can be copied, you know, a million times. And in the States, right now we're at a time where data brokers, companies like Axiom, et cetera, have been sanctioned by the FTC because right now those data brokers don't have to give copies of the data collected about us to us, even if we ask. So I think there's a great opportunity to have transparency and innovation, where companies don't have to not have that data, they just have to have a better relationship with their users to say, this is how we want to use that data. Do you feel comfortable with that usage?
Can you tell us about the Hapathon Project? What is that?
Sure. It's a nonprofit foundation I started. Our tagline is connecting happiness to action. And we have surveys, and we're using mobile tools like the ones right now that are gathering things about, say, your marketing preferences. We want to have, instead of all these great and glorious tools, be used just to track, you know, your purchases. We want to help people increase a sense of purpose. And by doing that, the survey that we have right now, it's at hapathon.com/survey, and it's free, by the way. In a protected data environment, people know exactly how we're using their data, which is for research purposes. People track their values for 2 weeks, meaning for every day for 2 weeks in a quantified self way. They look back on their day and they reflect, did I live to these values each day? Because a lot of research shows that if you don't live to your values, your happiness decreases. And after they do that, after 2 weeks, then we send them back information and insights showing where they may not be living to their values. So the logic there is, by that tracking, you're taking an action that can actually literally increase your happiness. So we're doing that, and also global workshops around the world.
John, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to John Havens, the author of Hacking Happiness, Why Your Personal Data Counts and How Tracking It Can Change the World.